Let's bring the committee meeting to order. First off, will Representative Murphy move the minutes from the January 30 meeting? Any discussion? All in favor of those minutes, say aye. All opposed? The minutes are adopted. We also have some bill referrals to announce. House File 416 and House File 480 are going to be re-referred to the Mental Health Division. The bill up for today is House File 305. Representative Huntley, do you want to make a motion?
I'm sure I was waiting for my partner here, but...
Well, why don't we start, and he'll be here soon.
Okay. I move House File 305 be recommended to pass.
And I think we're going to Commerce.
Sent to the Commerce Committee. Okay.
House File 305 has been moved to, the motion is to, on House File 305 that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Commerce and whatever else that committee is, Commerce and Labor Committee. So, with that, Representative Huntley.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, the deletion to get the bill in the order I would like it, and that is on page 6, line 619, 620, and 621. That's all of subdivision 4 on that page to delete that.
Okay, and just to get the bill in the order, the author would like it. Any discussion on that? All in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Huntley.
Members and Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to present this bill to you today. It's the Freedom to Breathe Act. And I want to make some points about why I think this is so important. My number one concern with this...
Welcome, Representative Stevenson.
Is the worker protection part of this bill. We have all sorts of laws on the books that protect workers in the workplace. Currently, those workers that work in bars, restaurants, and clubs do not have the protection that workers anyplace else in our society have. You should not have to choose between your health and having a job. This bill gives those workers in those facilities the same protection as workers have in the rest of our state. The science is clear. Secondhand smoke is just as dangerous to the health of people, leads to the usual things that smoking does, cancer, heart disease, diabetes. In fact, there's a recent study came out in the past week indicating that secondhand smoke is just as likely to cause diabetes as direct smoking does. So the science is clear. The Surgeon General came out this past summer with his recommendations. Again, they clearly show that secondhand smoke is bad for the workers' health. This bill would protect those workers. It does an additional thing. Right now, about 40% of the state's population are already covered with the smoking bans in most of these kinds of facilities, and this would even the playing field across the state and give everybody the same protections across the state. With that, I'll turn it over to Representative Severson for his introductory remarks, and I'll briefly go through the bill, and we'll turn it over to people who are here to testify.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, District 14. I just wanted to just kind of set a playing field for this particular bill, and the reasons that I'm in strong support along and happy to co-author it with Representative Huntley First being, as he had stated, this is an issue. The Surgeon General report of June of 2006 established that via the report, the scientific evidence indicates there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. It's a very comprehensive report. If you haven't had the time to read through it, it's very informative on science that we have been working on for the last 20 years, and it concludes with some very compelling arguments in that there is no acceptable level of risk-free smoke. And so that goes to the very issues of our health and the health issues that we as policymakers in this organization have to deal with. For us to say that this is something we can just set by the wayside and disregard this one because of personal property rights or any of the other rights, we have to beg the question then that when do we say we have to take a stand? So to me, the issue here is the Surgeon General has drawn a line in the sand, and he's saying that secondhand smoke has implications. We as policymakers fall responsible to the health of the people of the state of Minnesota that we represent here to enact good policy that protects them. The second point is a level playing field, as Representative Huntley had talked about. A lot of the merchants or the people that are dealing in the hospitality industry are very reluctant to move forward because of competition. If in my particular area in central Minnesota, if one city adopts it and the others do not, it puts that particular city at a disadvantage. Although they would like to implement that policy because of economic issues, and that's primarily what I hear in opposition to this bill is the economic issues drive this policy. We as policy makers here need to again ensure that the policies that we are enacting at the legislature create a healthy environment, number one, and that health issue cannot preempt the economic the short-term economic impact, which I think in the long term will be overrun with a statewide smoking ban that will, in essence, put us at a level playing field, and I think in the long run will cause the hospitality industry to boom. And I know there's a lot of people that are here to testify on both sides. I don't have a lot to say. There's going to be a lot of good, compelling information and testimony here today. But I would ask you, as representatives and as representatives of your people, to look through this in the lens of the health issue. And that our health is probably the one important thing that we can take forward. And if we are jeopardizing that by compromising because of economic issues, I think we're using the wrong level of measure here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson.
Would you like me to briefly walk through the bill?
That would be helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 just states what the goal of this bill is, which is to protect employees and the general public from known hazards. Sections 2 through 6 define all the terms that we need for this bill, and they note that the place of employment must be indoors and must house two or more people. Section 7 extends the prohibition of smoking from public places and meetings to all places of employment and public transportation. It also provides a clear exception for patients or residents in assisted living facilities. So what this does is say bars, restaurants, taxi cabs, buses, smoking is prohibited in those places. Section 9 establishes the situations where smoking will be permitted. They include participants in a scientific study, traditional Native American ceremonies, private homes, residents, and automobiles if they are not being used for a place of employment, hotel and motel rooms, and a tobacco product shop. We're going to have to check on the hotel and motel rooms. My understanding that they're not in the bill.
Okay, thank you.
A tobacco product shop are not included. That's where somebody goes to a place to buy tobacco, and there is basically no other reason to be there than to purchase tobacco and test it out whether you like to smoke it or not. So those places are. I read that wrong. I was giving you the list of things where this bill does not apply. And as I said, that's scientific studies, Native American ceremonies, private homes, residents, and automobiles not covered. Hotel and motel rooms are not covered. And a tobacco product shop is not covered by this bill. Section 10 places enforcement power with the Commissioner of Health and provides a misdemeanor and petty misdemeanor offenses for violating this law. It also prohibits discriminatory action against those exercising their rights to a smoke-free environment. And finish my presentation, Mr. Chairman and members, I will say there's talk of an economic impact of this bill. Let me say that we already spend over $1 billion per year in Minnesota to treat people that are suffering from tobacco, either from smoking or from breathing secondhand smoke. And there is also a $1 billion lost productivity due to that smoking in this state. So it's a huge economic issue.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. I think we'll move on to testimony right now, and we can get some questions after maybe some of those questions will be answered through the testimony. So why don't we move on? And how we're going to proceed here is we're going to watch the time very carefully, 25 minutes for the proponents, 25 minutes for the opponents, and we'll get through as many people as we can on each for each side of the issue, and then move on to amendments and the bill. The first person on the list here is Pat McCone. And if each witness could come down to the table, identify themselves and who they represent for the record. And the next person will be Wilma Jean Schwagel. So if you could kind of be knowing that you're going to be next. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Pat McCone. I'm the Senior Director for Tobacco Control Programs and Policy for the American Lung Association of Minnesota, and also the President of the Minnesota Smoke-Free Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak this afternoon on this important public health topic. The time has come for Minnesota to hop on the smoke-free train. It's left the station with over 50% of citizens in the United States already covered by smoke-free policies, including 20 states. At one time, Minnesota was the engine of that train. I'm here to say I don't want to be the caboose. 30% of Minnesota is now covered in some form by a smoke-free policy. It's time to protect the whole state. As one local official said to me, we did the heavy lifting, now the state needs to take on the load. This past election in Ohio, Arizona, Nevada, along with our own Mankato, showed again and again the strong support for this issue with voters. Even though the tobacco industry poured millions of dollars to defeat these initiatives and confuse the voter saw through the smokescreen and voted for strong smoke-free policies in these states. We're not asking you to venture down tracks into the unknown tunnel. We know for sure that when the policy passes, support for this continues to grow. We know no one's asking for smoking back on airlines, or movie theaters, or schools. That just doesn't happen. We know people continue to go out, enjoy good food and entertainment. We know they still poke up. We know health improves both in the immediate and long term. We know that with rights and privileges to own businesses in our country come responsibilities. And premier in those responsibilities are protecting the health and safety of workers and patrons. From building codes to handicapped access, when and where and how much alcohol is served. Now we want to stop serving up secondhand smoke. The Surgeon General's report clearly shows that this is a serious public health hazard that needs a serious, strong public policy answer. Schemes and loopholes, and that's what I call exemptions, they're schemes and loopholes, will be proposed to weaken this public health policy. Ultimately, the decision is health and protecting all workers and the public. There's no valid reason to protect one class of workers and not another. Every single person exposed is at risk. There is no safe level. Every worker should be protected. I hear the train a-coming. It's coming around the bend. Here are letters I enter into evidence for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. And you could leave those with the page, I think. Thank you very much. Ms. Schwagel, And the next testifier will be Bonnie Rose Mintz, so she could make her way down towards the table as well. Please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Wilma Jean Schwagel, and I am with Smoke Free Communities. I live in Avon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the Freedom Breathe Act. I'm here today because I think that it is important to represent the voice of hospitality workers who are concerned about the negative health effects of secondhand smoke in this debate. I would like to share why I support a comprehensive smoke-free law that will ensure a safe and healthy workplace. I was brought up in a small family-owned restaurant. Every day our environment was filled with smoke. Us 12 children and my parents worked in this business. My mother, Margaret, never smoked a day in her life. She died of cancer directly related to secondhand smoke. She was 68 years young, leaving us all in grief and her grandchildren, also leaving us in wonder of our own health. Within that same year, my sister Jerry died of lung cancer. She was 48 years young. She left behind 7 children who were young and devastated. Smoking changed all of our lives. I myself have never smoked. However, in everyday life, I'm exposed to it. The family-owned business is still in existence today. Like many other family-owned businesses, it has been handed down to the next generation. Again, in my family, we see signs related to secondhand smoke. My brother Dale is the owner now. 2 years ago, he had a triple bypass surgery. This health problem is directly related to his business environment. He is a non-smoker. This business was our family livelihood. It is my brother's livelihood, and then it will be handed down to his sons. Is this the legacy we want to hand down to our future generations? There is talk of exemptions with the smoke-free law. My brother is hoping there is no exemption. He is wanting it passed. He would like, as we all would, to enjoy our grandchildren. The time is now to give future family business owners a healthy, long-living life, free from smoke. If any of us live with the belief God first, others second, and yourself last, this can and should be passed. No exemption. The fact is, though, the hospitality industry is competitive. A small restaurant or bar can't act on its own. The marketplace won't protect restaurant and bar workers from secondhand smoke. This responsibility lies only with the state legislature. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming down. Ms. Mintz, and then Pong Zhang is next.
My name is Bonnie Rose Mintz, and I recently retired after working as a health unit coordinator at St. Francis Regional Medical Center in Shakopee after 23 years. I worked 20 years switchboard operator and admissions, and then I worked 3 years in oncology as a health unit coordinator. And I speak on behalf of 28,000 SEIU members across the state and asking for your support of this Freedom to Breathe Act. I think it is so important and so relevant. My years in the cancer center and witnessing patients who contracted lung cancer who never smoked a day in their life, I mean, my heart went out to them. And we place so much emphasis on the safety of ergonomics and equipment in our work environment, and yet the air has not even been taken into consideration. And I feel so strongly that the future of medicine is in preventative, and to prevent the cost, the high cost of treatment is so extraordinary. We have to get on the bandwagon of prevention in every aspect, and this is one of the most important areas right now. Other countries in Europe today, I heard France went 100% non-smoking in all their public facilities. Amen. But why are we behind Europe? Why don't we step up to the plate? I lost 2 of my friends to lung cancer in 2005. One of them had been in the restaurant business for 25 years. I believe secondhand smoke was certainly a factor. I'm hoping that you will all take this into consideration by voting for the equal protection for all service workers, no matter where they work, bars, restaurants, private clubs. If someone wants to smoke, they have the right to smoke, but they shouldn't be endangering the lives of individuals around them. They can smoke privately, by themselves, in their own home, in their vehicle, etc. Finally, as an advocate for working families, SEIU supports this legislation because it will help to reduce health care costs. I believe nationwide it costs over $9 billion a year, and just within Minnesota, $1.6 billion is spent every year on costs relating to smoking. By voting to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act with no exemptions, you will provide equal protection to all service workers and improve the health care of all Minnesotans and take a step towards making health care more affordable for all of us. I can recall when patients could smoke in their rooms at hospitals, and our bosses were smoking at their desks constantly. Trust me, we've eradicated that from hospitals today, but we need to eradicate it from these other workplaces too. Thank you for your time. Please support the Freedom to Breathe Act.
Thank you, Ms. Nitz. Peng Zhang, and then the next witness will be Jim Ryland.
Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Peng Zhang. I'm honored to have this opportunity to speak before you today. I'm a senior at the University of St. Thomas. I was born in Hastings, Minnesota, and I'm currently residing in St. Paul. This issue takes me back to when I grew up with my grandfather. My grandfather is well known and respected amongst the Hmong community. Because of this, we constantly had guests at our house. My grandfather, along with our guests, were constantly smoking in the living room where they would all sit in and enjoy each other's company. In what the older generation calls the old country, tobacco was a rare and expensive commodity. During those times, the elders saw tobacco as a sign of nobility, and smoking in the living room around children was acceptable. After a while, my grandfather realized the dangers of tobacco. He saw that tobacco only leads to death and disease. He quit smoking. He preached to others about non-smoking, and he banned smoking in his own house. He was a leader, and he led by example. For my family, my grandfather's word is the law. He used his authority to protect us from the dangers of secondhand smoke because that was his duty. That was more than 10 years ago. Today, the state of Minnesota faces the same problem. I encourage this legislature to be leaders, to make the changes necessary, and to make Minnesota a better place to live. It is your duty to protect Minnesota workers, and now is the time. In the words of Josiah Charles Stamps, it is easy to dodge our responsibilities, but we cannot dodge the consequences of dodging our responsibilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ryland, and please again identify yourself and who you represent, anybody. And Dr. Richard Hurd will be the next witness.
My name is Jim Ryland, and good afternoon to Chairman and the members of the committee. My name again is Jim Ryland, and I live in Brooklyn Park, and I am here today to voice my growing choices for Minnesotans to go smoke-free and Freedom for Breathing Act. I am also here to speak as a perspective of a veteran who supports smoke-free space, including private clubs like the VFW and American Legion. I've been proud to also serve 2 years in the service in the Army and also 2 years in the Reserve. There is also an attention paid to the idea of private clubs to be exempt from smoking by legislation. I am here to tell you I'm not that all veterans want to have clubs smoking. I also would like to see people that can be kept from secondhand smoke. I believe that veterans clubs and service clubs are important fabric in our local community, but they are not keeping up with times. We need veterans clubs to stay strong and vibrant because a lot of our folks are coming home from Vietnam or Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of them are hurting. we must keep our clubs clean and smoke-free. I can tell you from personal experience that I have not been able to enjoy the veterans' service clubs because of secondhand smoke. I've joined the VFW a number of times and had to quit because of secondhand smoke. After years of keeping from going to the VFW, I tried going back because they said they allowed areas that were smoke-free. I still cannot go there because the smoke seems to work itself all the way through the VFW. I've tried the American Legion Club and the Elk Clubs, and it's the same thing there. Smoke is very bad. Once this is stopped, I will join. I can guarantee you, I can promise all of you, I will join the club again. I will not stay away from it. When I was in the service, there was a number of percentage of people that smoked in the service, but not that many. And yet they weren't allowed to smoke in the barracks. They were not allowed to smoke in the mess halls. They were not allowed to smoke in the work area. I was in the medical corps, so maybe this is part of it, but they were not allowed in the barracks or any of these places. I say, if the Army can do this, why can't Minnesota do this? We need this. It's very important that this law goes into effect to keep us from smoking in all these places. I could sit here and talk for hours of things that I've known in my life about smoking, and one of them is the VFW, where people seem to work their way into the area they weren't supposed to smoke, and their clothes were so strong, you couldn't even sit with them. I felt that there was just no way out. You were smelling smoke no matter what it was. So I advise everybody to go smoke-free in Minnesota. We need this for our health and many other reasons. I can go on, and I think the vets from Vietnam and Iraq and them need to come to these clubs because they need to be supported. They are going down. Anybody that looks in now, they are not getting the support, and they're going to end up going broke. And they think that by not smoking in there, they're going to broke. I've seen it totally the other way. When you don't smoke, the restaurants, everything, go back to building up their economy much better with no smoking in that club. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you to the other, I'm assuming those are also veterans who were standing behind you earlier?
Yeah.
Thank you for coming down as well.
We're
agreeing
with this gentleman.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Hurt. And Sandy Vitish is next. There's about 8 minutes left.
Mr. Chairman and committee, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Richard Hurt. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here representing myself, and though I'm professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and have been involved in tobacco issues for as long as I can remember, and that's not a real good sign because they say the first thing to go is your memory, and I can't remember what the second thing was, but I hope it wasn't important. I'm here to testify a little bit about the science, and the basis for the hazard of secondhand smoke goes back to the Surgeon General's report of 1964, which showed that cigarette smoking causes disease. It causes heart disease, lung cancer, and we all know about that. So when we look at an environmental toxin, you have to figure out if there's some level of exposure that causes the same risk and same diseases that are caused when you have heavy exposure like in a smoker. And what we found over the years is that the very same diseases that are present in smokers are also present in people who are exposed to secondhand smoke. And there's a dose response. The higher the dose, the higher the exposure, the more the risk. I'd also like to at least dispel one of the things you're probably going to hear about, and that is that OSHA, you hear a lot about having rules about this. OSHA does not have a rule or a standard for secondhand smoke exposure. They tried to do it in the mid-1990s, but it got caught up in the political process, and the tobacco industry successfully blocked any OSHA regulations. So OSHA does not have a limit of exposure for this. The EPA does, but OSHA does not. So anyone says that they do have a limited exposure, that is not correct. Cigarette smoke and tobacco smoke contains over 4,000 chemicals, over 60 known carcinogens. It contains things like nickel, arsenic. You've heard about the Russian spy with polonium, or you can get polonium from tobacco smoke. Lead, phenol, chromium 6 was present in the water. The movie Aaron Brockovich, that was chromium 6. Well, chromium 6 is also present in tobacco smoke, formaldehyde, acetaldehyde. The list goes on and on and on. There are over 4,000 chemicals, over 60 known carcinogens. That's why it's so hazardous. In the Surgeon General's report you've heard about, there are numbers. There are numbers about the acute effects in children and the chronic effects in adults. And for children, over 200,000 episodes of asthma are provoked by secondhand smoke. Almost 300,000 cases of lower respiratory infections in children caused by secondhand smoke exposure. And almost 1 million cases of otitis media, recurrent otitis media, caused by secondhand smoke exposure in children. Over 3,000 cases of lung cancer each year in non-smokers, and over 50,000 deaths from heart disease, heart attacks, in people who are non-smokers exposed to secondhand smoke. The other things that the Surgeon General report talked about was the immediate effects on the cardiovascular system, and that there is no risk-free limit of exposure. There's no level below which there's no demonstrable risk, and so there's no risk-free level of exposure. As far as the immediate effects, 5 minutes of exposure to secondhand smoke will reduce the ability of your aorta. Will reduce the ability of your aorta to dilate by 20%. And that doesn't sound like a big deal to you, but for those of us in medicine, that is an enormous effect on the endothelial function of the aorta. With 30 minutes of exposure, it reduces the coronary velocity reserve of the heart to that of a smoker. That is the reserve that you need for a fight or flight sort of response and reaction. So these are demonstrable, very acute effects, not chronic, but acute effects with 5 to 30 minutes of exposure. For coronary disease, a person who has heavy exposure, like exposure at work, at home, and at play in social settings, they will have the same risk of developing a heart attack as people who are light smokers, smoking about a half a pack of cigarettes per day. That is an enormous effect. And you also probably have heard about the heart attack reduction in places like Helena, Montana, Pueblo, Colorado, and the Piedmont area of Italy. There are now 3 studies which show basically the following, that admissions after you pass a smoke-free workplace law in a confined area where you can actually measure the effects. In Pueblo, Colorado, there was a 27% reduction in admissions for acute myocardial infarctions, heart attacks, after the smoke-free workplace law was placed in Pueblo. And not to forget about cancer again, you've often heard that we know that smoking causes cancer of the urinary tract, such as the kidneys, the ureter, or the bladder. And people say, well, how could that be? Well, it can be because the carcinogens that are present in tobacco smoke get excreted in the urine. And what we know now is that that is a direct relationship between the development of cancer in the urinary tract and secondhand smoke, as well as cigarette smoke to begin with. With 4 hours of exposure to secondhand smoke in adults, we can measure in the urine one of the most potent carcinogens related to tobacco smoke on the planet, called NNAL, which is a metabolite of NNK. And infants who are exposed to secondhand smoke at home through parents smoking around them, we can measure the same chemical. So there's no question. In fact, the Surgeon General said the debate is over, that secondhand smoke kills people. There's no question about it, but unfortunately the debate isn't over.
There's about 2 minutes to go.
Okay. And as a treater, the last thing I'll say is that we know that when we have workplaces that are smoke-free, it reduces consumption in continuing smokers, it increases the chances of a person stopping smoking, and it decreases the chances of your child, a teenager, from ever starting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Hurt. Sandy Bidish is the last one on the agenda, and there's about a minute to go, so thank you.
My name is Sandy Veitch, and I'm just representing myself, and I won't take probably more than a minute. What I'm here to say is, actually I'm here to make you people feel somewhat guilty. I think we can all say that Nobody likes hypocrisy. And I notice that you people all work in an environment that's smoke-free. And that if you're not willing to extend those same benefits to people that work in the hospitality industry, I don't think that you people should have those benefits either. So if you don't pass this legislation, I think that you should allow smoking in these rooms. And if you don't like it, you can do what the hospitality says. You can go and find another job, which is what their argument is. And since you people... Yeah, okay? And since... Come on, I only got a couple more seconds here. And since you people have probably made a lot of connections, it just on the basis of what you're doing now with the outside world, it would be a lot easier for you people to find alternate employment than it would be for a bartender or a waitress who probably doesn't have a whole lot of other skills. So I'm just addressing the hypocrisy issue of it. And if I can just quickly say about OSHA, a lot of bars say that we should be able to regulate our own industries. That's not true in any industry. OSHA will have certain regulations for workplace safety. The fact that they don't cover cigarette smoke now is irrelevant. Government does produce or does dictate what can and what cannot go on in public workplaces. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, please. And we don't want to, for either side, let's refrain from the applause and et cetera. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I was just going to thank the testifier for coming down, and maybe Representative Huntley would see that as a friendly amendment to his bill.
Thank you. Charles Sinclair is the first, we'll again stick to the 25-minute rule. And Mike McFarland will be the next testifier. Mr. Sinclair.
Good afternoon, Reps and Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I just wanted to run through my personal history in the hospitality industry. In 1971, partner and I opened a restaurant, Fabulous Ferns, on Cathedral Hill, which at that time was the heart of St. Paul's urban ghetto. We worked for 16 years building that business up. The business increased approximately 3 to 5% every year due to our hard work and great staff we have. Up until about 2 years ago, Ramsey County passed the Ramsey County Smoking Ordinance, which was copied off the Olmsted County Ordinance. We spent $53,000, put up the wall, increased the HVAC, put in Honeywell filters, had many comments from our guests, which our position is we want to basically appeal to everyone, smokers, non-smokers. We're looking at satisfying all our guests' needs. We spent the $53,000, got an exemption from Ramsey County, had great feedback from our customers. Our food sales actually increased about 2.5%. Our liquor sales, beverage sales stayed the same. And everything was great. We spent the money. We went to the bank and borrowed the money. We're still paying that loan off right now. We had testing people come in with testing equipment. Our air at a Friday happy hour was cleaner than the air out in the parking lot on Selby Avenue. It was much cleaner than the bus stop. It was incredibly cleaner than the air downtown St. Paul. Everything was great. Customers were commenting that the air in Ferns was pristine. It was clean. There were smokers in the space. We had great ventilation. We took care of the problem. 7 months into that exemption, the city of St. Paul decided they were going to go with a strict smoking ban. Basically, took the money we spent, just threw it away. Our sales immediately dropped about 14%. Our cocktail hour sale, our cocktail hour evaporated. Our late night sales were hurt. Those 14% were mostly in the beverage area, which is the highest profit area for us, and impacted dramatically the bottom line of the operation. We have since then laid off 6 people. We've cut hours. We're in the process of raising some of our prices right now. We're trying to survive in this under this strict smoking ban in St. Paul. My customers, people ask, well, where are your customers gone? Most of my customers, especially my happy hour customers, have gone home. They're an older, we probably happy hour have a median age of about 45 years old. Well, they're not going to drive across the county or into the next town. They grab a six-pack at home. They go home. They light up. They watch the ball game at home. They watch the Wild, whatever, and they smoke around their kids. My son and daughter both work for me there. We don't really have a lot of alternatives, but, you know, keep on going. This is our family's asset. This is what my retirement's all about. This is what their inheritance is all about. And there are a reasonable alternative. People talk about clean indoor air. I am not a proponent of smoking. My daughter doesn't smoke. My son does. I want to get up alongside his head every time I see him pull out a cigarette. The problem is that in indoor air pollution is composed of a number of different variables. There's about five different types of indoor air pollution. Our position in the hospitality industry is we would spend the money to buy the HVAC and the filtration to create a better environment than just taking the smokers out of the mix. Smoking is only one of five indoor air pollutions, and it frankly is not the most serious. We would spend the money like we did at Ferns to clean up the environment, to provide a better environment for our employees, for our children, for the people that we care about, and we would do it if we had the choice. If we are mandated something like a strict air statewide ban, it's going to dramatically impact the hospitality industry. It's going to dramatically impact the state of Minnesota, our local and regional economies, our tourism, our convention trade. And so I beg you to give us the choice in our own businesses, and we will make the right choices. We're not sacrificing people's health for money. We spent the money at Ferns. We borrowed $53,000. And we will spend the money, but we have to have a choice in how to run our businesses. Thank you. I wanted to mention, I'm a co-founder of the Minnesota Tavern League, and I was, with the Selby Avenue deal, started the Selby Avenue Business Association, spent 4 years as their president. So I'm involved in the St. Paul community. I care about this city, and I really don't want to see anything like this that would really negatively impact our local economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sinclair. Mr. McFarland and Steve Watson is next. And we do have several testifiers on the opponent's side, just so keep that in mind for fairness.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and the committee members. My name is Mike McFarland, and I represent the Paul Bunyan Bowl and the Bowling Proprietors Association of Minnesota. My family has been in the bowling recreational business since 1950 when my grandparents started Paul Bunyan Center in Brainerd, Minnesota. They passed the business down to my parents, and they passed it down to me. I myself have been in the bowling business for 17 years and have worked directly with my customers all of those 17 years. I know the makeup of my customers, their habits, and their likes and dislikes. I feel a smoking ban will directly affect my ability to compete in this extremely competitive market. I have directly polled my customers, and I know that when a smoking ban takes place, it will instantly cost me at least 15 to 20% of my league bowlers who are used to things the way they are. This is a recreational business, and I depend upon these bowlers each year to keep my business open. My own team threatened to quit when I brought up banning smoking to the bar. The bowling season is 1 year long, and the effect of even 15% over 1 year will make it possible that I will not be able to continue running my business and pass it on to my son when I retire like my parents did for me. The bowling center I own has been on its location for over 50 years. 4 years ago, I expanded and modernized my center to compete for the extremely difficult entertainment dollar. I now have a large mortgage and am running a very thin line as it is. I currently have over 25 employees, and they have all expressed their dislike for a smoking ban, even the non-smokers like myself. I love my small business and want to continue running it, but I fear that more restrictions on something that is done voluntarily and isn't illegal will hurt my business and be in direct relation to it failing should I get the expected losses from a smoking ban. I have not instituted a smoking ban voluntarily because I know it will affect my business in a negative way. I'm quite sure that... this is my son Nathan and his wife Krista. He works for me full-time at the bowling alley.
Welcome.
I'm also a veteran of 7 years, and I remember lots of places where you had to endure things with stuff that the other gentleman was talking about. And I'm also surprised that as dangerous as they say smoking, secondhand smoke is, that any of us are around now after the 70s.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland.
Thank you.
Mr. Watson and Charlie Brannon is next.
For the record, my name is Steve Watson, and I am the president of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. Mr. Chair and members, I want to thank you for allowing me to address you on this very important issue as it relates to the hospitality industry. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the association's board of directors, our legislative committee, and the 1,200 restaurants that belong to the association. The issue of statewide smoking, or the statewide smoking ban, has been the cause for much concern and debate amongst our board of directors and the membership. We have always held the position that it is not the role of government to dictate how our industry chooses to serve our guests. As private business owners, we feel it is our decision whether to allow smoking in our establishments, just as it is the customer's decision whether or not to patronize our businesses and an employee's decision whether or not to work for us. We continue to hold to this position today. However, at this point, with more and more local governments choosing to intervene in private businesses and the probability of a statewide smoking ban becoming increasingly likely, our legislative committee has asked me to become involved in the debate in order to help mitigate the negative effects a statewide smoking ban would have on our industry. To that end, I would like to briefly mention the four concerns of the Restaurant Association. First, we believe any statewide ban, if enacted, should include all industry segments with no exceptions. By exempting certain segments of the industry, the state would be picking winners and losers by giving a competitive advantage to one business over another business. Additionally, if you are truly concerned about the health of employees, it is hard to justify the health of a server in an establishment that serves 51% alcohol is less important than the health of a server in an establishment that serves 51% food. We thank the author for the current language that includes all industry segments and encourage the committee to keep it that way. Our second concern is the penalties on the owners. We believe that any penalties for violating a smoking ban should be placed on the person who is actually doing the smoking, not the owner who is trying to run his or her business. This legislation charges a smoker with a petty misdemeanor, but the owner is charged with a full misdemeanor, punishable by 90 days in jail or a $1,000 fine or both. Our third concern is preemption. We believe that if this body, you, the legislators, want to create a level playing field in the state, then the ban should preempt local smoking ordinances, and I believe the language in the bill by the author has been changed to reflect that. Lastly, we would ask that you think about the impact of this legislation and what it will have on the small business owners throughout the state. This bill will have an impact on revenues. Our industry is one that has small profit margins, with many small businesses struggling to turn a profit. The loss in revenue from a smoking ban will force establishments to close. We hope that you will look at ways to offset the business costs of this bill through some sort of tax break. If I'm not mistaken, tourism is one of the top revenue producers in this state today. The very people you charge as hosts to take care of the tourists and the guests that visit our states are the very same small business entrepreneurs, you may force to close the door if this legislation is not done properly. Mr. Chair, thank you. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Charlie Brannon is next, John Alexander after that. And we have about 10 minutes left, and there's a lot of witnesses. So in respect to the witnesses that follow, if you could keep your remarks as short as brief as possible. Thank you.
Yes, I'm not a speaker, so I'll make it short. In 2001, Olmsted County created a very fair compromise to allow smoking bars at 50% or greater in sales. We feel this is a model ordinance that has been accepted. Since 2001, we have not had one registered complaint lodged with our chamber or Rochester Convention Visitors Bureau. The Olmsted County Taverns, and I do represent the Olmsted County Taverns Association, I'm sorry, from Rochester.
And I believe you have a
survey
as well.
We did the survey in October, actually it was December of last year, of 2006, to find what the choices of individuals are. Currently, the city of Rochester has 100 liquor licenses. 78 of them are smoke-free currently, with only 22 having smoking. So again, it represents a fair, and they're saying that 20% of people smoke. It's a fair resemblance of what people want, and that's what we're here for. All the cities of, and also I passed out, all the cities of Olmsted County also passed a referendum or signed on to a referendum indicating that the current smoking ordinance does work in Olmsted County and that anything should be done should be on a state level. So I will, that will conclude my comments.
Thank you very much. Mr. Alexander, Sue Jeffers is next. I'd also note, members, there are some letters in the materials of support and opposition, just so you know that, and I won't be testifying.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is John Alexander. I'm the owner of a bar in North Minneapolis. Happens to be one of the roughest bars I would say in the state of Minnesota. I came from Northeast to North Minneapolis to buy this bar, which was closed in a community that was run down, that I felt there could be opportunity to advance my community and be a part of the North Side, which I've lived all my life. When I went in there, everybody called me a fool to do what I did, but I remodeled the bar and put over $400,000 to $500,000 in this bar to make the community right. It's on Broadway at 200 West Broadway, and the North Side is basically a black community, and I met a lot of good friends there. Since the smoking ban, I have lost 40% of my business and lost about $400,000 of gross income. I had 16 employees, most of them were single parents who I supported in the North Side and I hired from the community. I had to lay off 8 of them. Every one of them came to me and asked me if I could find employment for them. And at the same time, they all came with me with tears. As a business owner, I had some funds and I helped those that I could. Some moved out of the state because of the smoking ban. Some felt helpless. Now, I took a chance, and I took a big chance for my community. And I think my people that I elected let me down as a business owner. And I'm really affected by this. I have a really great chance of losing what I have, and I work for them. My son works for me. He shakes his head every day. He says, Dad, what are we going to do? I says, we're going to bear through this. My problem is this. Why don't they give us choices? There is a chance that we could put ventilation that can resolve a lot of these problems. Why didn't they come to us and try to find a compromise? Why did they shove the smoking ban down our throat? Why wasn't there choices given to us? People smoke. I'm a non-smoker. I've never smoked in my life. My whole family is non-smoking. There's people in that community that do smoke. And they want to come to a bar and watch a good sports program. They want to have a good meal. They want to have a cigarette. I have lawyers that come from downtown that used to come every Sunday before the smoking ban and sit in my bar in the North Side, which they would never come in before, and sit and have a cigarette and talk about what they're going to do the next week and watch a good football game. I have lost those people. I have lost a lot of people in the community that do not come to my bar because there is none smoking. Not only that, they've go outside now. The smokers go outside, and now I have a problem with narcotics. I've tried to resolve all these problems by working with the fourth precinct from the city of Minneapolis, and we're working hard on it right now. Yesterday, I met with the Minneapolis City Police Chief and expressed my problems. His concern when I said, you know, the biggest problem was they didn't give us choices. They just shoved it right down our throat. And he says, now we've got people smoking outside and bringing more people around my bar outside trying to buy narcotics. How do I resolve the problem? His answer was, you know, that smoking ban we get, that is a problem. And we've got to find a result. Our result is work with us. Try to find a way that we can put a ventilation system so we can all work together as a community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming down. Ms. Jeffers and Manfred Page is next. And if you even want to come down and sit at the table so we can keep it even moving more quickly. Thank you. Ms. Jeffers.
Hi, Sue Jeffers. I own Stubborn Herbs Bar and Restaurant. I'm part of just about every hospitality organization there is in the state. I've owned my bar and restaurant for 28 years, worked in the hospitality industry for over 30 years. I know it's really hard to believe, but I don't have lung cancer and I'm not dead yet either. Secondhand smoke is not mustard gas, folks. We need to have, when Hennepin County and Minneapolis, all the lobbyists came together, and they told us all these stories too. We hate the smell of smoke. We're going to save on health care costs. We're going to increase your businesses. You know what? They're lies. I have watched over 100 businesses close, and with all the jobs, with all the revenues, everything. These are facts that are backed up by studies across the United States, including the own studies done by Bloomington, Minneapolis, and Hennepin County, and I'm sure probably Olmsted County too. People ask, you know, Sue, you own a bar in Minneapolis, you're under a total smoking ban. Why would you just want, wouldn't you want the whole state to go? And I said, no, I wouldn't want this heartbreak and disaster on all these small businesses across the whole entire state of Minnesota. This is wrong, people. You have to give them a choice. You have to give people a choice. We can come in, we can clean up the pollutants. The dose is the poison. Everybody knows that. The internet and bar owners like us speaking up and different organizations, many scientists now are saying this is an exaggerated health risk. You cannot come in and say, I don't like the smell of smoke, therefore we need to ban it. You cannot have an arbitrary definition of public health. We have to have clear, set standards. And this committee is where that discussion should begin. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have about 4 minutes to go. Manfred Peach is next. Martin Duffy is next. And I'm afraid, he's not here. Mr. Duffy? Thank you. And Dick Kolb is the next witness, if you could come down towards the table as well. And I'm afraid we may not get all the witnesses on the list.
My name is Martin Duffy. I own Duffy's Bar and Grill in Osseo, Minnesota. First, I'd like to say that my servers and my bartenders are very intelligent people. They have options. They're not idiots, like it was suggested earlier. Also, I would like the choice to put an air filtration system in my business. My bar is a clean bar. The air in my bar is clean. My wife works there. I work there. We've both been in the industry for many years. My employees are my family. This is my home. I would like the option to put a sign on the front door that says, if you enter this establishment, you will be exposed to secondhand smoke. Fine, if you want me to do that, I'll do it. Give me the opportunity to put an air filtration system in. I've already begun the process. I'll be more than happy to go to the bank and borrow the money I need to put in the best air filtration system money can buy or a loan can get. I will put that in there. I will thank you very much, and so will my customers, because my customers come to me every day, as do my employees, and they say, Duff, why are they doing this? It's my choice. And you know what? There are a goodly number of them that don't smoke, and they come to me and say, Duff, I'm a non-smoker, but it should be my choice. So please, give me the choice to improve the air quality in my business. Give my customers the choice to come in or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Dick Kolb, and I think Mr. Kolb will be our last witness.
My name is Dick Kolb. I am the Adjutant and Gambling Manager for the Yosemite Grove American Legion. Mr. Chairman and members of the Health and Human Services Committee, good afternoon. I'm here speaking against the current bill. For the record, I'm a non-smoker, gave them up 13 years ago. Most people are familiar with the Surgeon General's report last June regarding the effects of secondhand smoke. The Surgeon General's report contained a statement that smoke-free laws don't harm businesses, and I disagree with that. For 9 months of 2005, Hennepin County had a smoke-free ordinance in place, and the results were devastating for our hospitality businesses, including the Yosemite Grove American Legion. Our liquor sales were down every month, always more than 25%, and on occasion reached the 38% range. We are a nonprofit private organization, and these sales figures came close to closing our business. As the gambling manager of our organization, I can add that sales in our charitable gambling area suffered just as much. Net proceeds of toll tabs are distributed back to the community. As a result of the smoking ban, we've had to eliminate many of the traditional donations, such as scholarships and school safety patrol training, and limit other donations, such as American Legion Baseball and the Boys State Program. Our American Legion is located 3 miles from Anoka County, and we lost most of our customers to that area, which had smoking available. Other charitable gambling organizations in Hennepin County took a considerable loss of income, as spelled out reports from the State Gambling Control Board. Hennepin County commissioners created an exception to the smoking ban, allowing businesses to have smoking for an 18-month period ending in July of 2007. Personally, I believe a smoking ban law will be enacted this year, but I am asking you to create an amendment to the current proposal. Businesses and communities adjoining neighboring states will experience the same disaster we felt in 2005 unless you create an amendment allowing what is considered a partial smoking ban, where businesses, including private clubs, with liquor sales in excess of food sales, would be allowed to have smoking in their buildings. More than 40 bars went out of business during the Hennepin County smoking ban. That figure could be exceeded if an amendment is not attached, allowing for partial smoking in bars and private clubs. Prior to hearing any discussion of a smoking ban in Hennepin County, our organization purchased a state-of-the-art smoke reduction system costing $28,000.
We have about a minute. Thank you.
Which is strong enough to eliminate any noticeable smell of smoke in clothing. We also have a downstairs smoking area which has its own ventilation system. We should be allowed to use this for our smokers. In addition to passing a partial smoking ban bill, I strongly encourage you to disallow any local preemption. We need a bill that is consistent throughout the state, one that truly would not hurt our businesses. I strongly encourage you to pass a bill that is fair for everyone. A partial smoking ban allowing customers and employees a choice, and allows organizations such as ours to continue to be a strong voice in support of our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming down. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you had laid out the ground rules, but any of the testifiers left, did anybody drive, do you know, Mr. Chair, did they drive of some distance to get here?
You know, I don't know. We took the testimony, this is the list in the order people signed up. I don't know where people are
excuse
from.
Me. Mr. Chair, no disrespect to you at council. I've listened on both ends, and I've heard from business owners on both ends, or somebody from the community, or somebody who represents that. Can you give 6 minutes for one employee on either side of the issue? Not bar owner, not family-oriented, anything. Just employees. I just want two. One against and one for, because I think employees who work in these bars who have no association to the family or the owners should at least have someone speak to them. I have not heard one employee. Thank you.
Thank you. And there were I think some employees on the proponent's side. Yeah, Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at the committee procedures, and I noted that you sent out an email, or your assistant sent out an email last week giving us notice that there was going to be this hearing, and you requested people to come and testify. I don't remember that email set a limit in terms of the time, and I understand it's your prerogative to run the committee.
And it did, Representative Emmer.
It did. Yes. Did it have the 25 minutes?
Yes, I believe so.
And were all these folks advised that they'd be limited?
When they called, they were.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Amendment A711, if we could. I think that's Representative Trumbus.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Do you think, as a committee, Mr. Chairman, we could take a vote on whether or not to extend the time, and if it passes, we could allow some of the employees to come up and speak also? Would that be in line?
I think maybe they'll have comments during the amendments, but I think we need to move on in the interest of time. Thank you.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have a question regarding the bill for the author.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, can you tell me how this affects private homeowners? We spent a lot of time last year talking about eminent domain and government taking of private property, and there was strong bipartisan support for upholding and encouraging and supporting private property rights. And so I'm just wondering how this affects not only businesses, bars and restaurants, but how does this affect me in my private home if I have an employee that comes in or if I don't?
Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that this does not cover private homes. I am not clear as to if you are running a business out of your home and have an employee, what the impact of that is in this bill. If somebody on one of the research people would know, you could ask them.
Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, I think that as long as you run a business out of your home, such as a daycare, that would be in the subdivision 3 of the prohibition, section 7. As long as it's within the hours of business and there's employees present, it would be prohibited.
And Representative Broad, I turn your attention to subdivision 1B1 as well. I think that that should answer your question. Section 3, it's page 2. Section 3, which is called subdivision 1B1, it talks about homeowners use the area exclusively and regularly as the principal place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Huntley. I think the point should be made, though, whether it's your place of business or not, it's also your private home. And so I did want to make a point that this does impact private homes in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to that point, when we're talking of probably getting to the daycare issue and some of those where we have private businesses that are established in a private residence, those individuals have come into contract with the owner of the home, and there's an expectancy under that contract, because under that contract as well, I believe there are responsibilities by the Department of Health to ensure coming on a regular basis that that place is fit for a business that is acceptable to the public. And under that provision, I believe that that individual, as a private house, is acquiescing or coming under contract and with the understanding that that home is going to be available to the public. And so I think they give up a certain percentage of what we're talking about here, which is the private rights, private property rights, to come under that contract and make their home open to a business.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to follow up.
We will have a time to debate the bill after the amendment.
Yep, I just wanted to be clear on what we're talking about, too, and thank you, Representative Severson, for that explanation. I think you're right in terms of the licensed portions of it, but there's a lot of private businesses that I believe this covers that are separate from those which are licensed by the state or the local government. They're just private business owners, private businesses that are doing business in their homes. So I think it's more expansive than just those licensed daycare centers or other licensed entities. So I just want to make that point, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chumper?
No.
Okay, thank you. Representative Finstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to further with that point, it's, I guess this is politics, but it is interesting that instantly when we talk about this going into the private home, daycares are brought into the debate. Representative Severson, Representative Huntley, Representative Trema and those of us that represent rural parts of the state, a lot of our economic development and economic growth and providing opportunities for young families to move back in our districts have been in the opportunity of the area of home offices. So to go right to the daycare card, I think is ingenuous. I don't even know what the word I want to say. Disingenuous. Thank you.
And
I'm just a dumb
representative
from
that
Brown County.
I actually think that was council that raised the daycare, not partisan folks. So, Representative Latremba, your amendment.
To my amendment?
Is that 11, your amendment?
Right. I was going to actually say something about...
Okay.
I did a little research on farming and trucking, and if you've hired somebody and they're in the truck, that you also cannot smoke in that truck. So if that clears it up a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Trumba.
My amendment is...
And it's AO7-0011 members, I believe. Is that correct?
Right, AO7-0011. Basically, what this amendment does is address what a lot of the hospitality, bars, restaurants have been talking about, and it's about the ventilation system. You start out at a, if you're 40, 60, 40, 40 bar, 60 food, you would have until 2009. If it's 50-50, it'd be 2010, and it continues that way. We know that there are many other pollutants, including pesticides and fungus, that are in restaurants and bars, and that's just a fraction of what the lists say. But I do believe that it would actually be a cleaner facility than just taking away the smoke. I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Representative Huntley first, and then other. We can have some discussion. Or Representative Severson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not an expert on the ventilation systems that would be required here, and I'm not sure what they work, and I'm not sure what exchanging indoor air every 2 hours means. And I was wondering if it would be possible for Dr. Hurt to comment on that.
Sure. Okay, well, that's fine. We'll have Dr. Hurt come down, and then if that would make sense, if you want to make a few comments.
I rely on experts for this sort of thing as well, and the expert in this case happens to be the Surgeon General of the United States. In the Surgeon General report, one of the major findings, one of the six major findings, was that ventilation does not extract secondhand smoke from indoor air. The only way to eliminate that exposure is to have no smoking indoors. The experts that I've talked to about this and have read a lot about it as well, the particles of secondhand smoke, tobacco smoke, are so energized, they're so rapidly moving, that it is impossible to ventilate an entire room with something less than a very powerful ventilation system with the sucking power of a tornado, is what it would take. All of us have experienced, if you were to light a cigarette over that exit sign over there, within 2 minutes, it would be at this exit sign over here. It's just impossible. The particles are so energized, and when they stay in the environment for even just a short time, they become even more energized.
Thank you, Dr. Mr. Wiermont, is that?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And he was on the list, member, so just that's why we're allowing it to go.
With all due respect to the doctor, I don't know if I'd consider that a qualified assessment of ventilation. I, on the other hand, have been involved in ventilation for 15 years. I'm very familiar with OSHA regulations because I follow them day to day in my work. My livelihood these days...
And if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. My name is Mark Warnemont. I engineer and sell industrial ventilation systems, factories and workplaces all around the state. Primarily, a lot of our customers are working with trying to eliminate welding smoke. Welding smoke, it should come as no surprise, is very carcinogenic, much more so than secondhand smoke. It's much heavier and much more concentrated.
And the doctor made one point to try and preempt what I'm going to say because it is one of their talking points. There is no permissible exposure limit for secondhand smoke. That is true. That argument is a canard. There's also no permissible exposure limit for welding smoke. And the reason being is because there are 4,000 chemicals in secondhand smoke and or welding smoke. You cannot take an air quality reading and get one result. You're going to get 4,000 results. Actually, what they do is they take a reading for each component of secondhand smoke or welding smoke. If, for instance, we're measuring...
And if we could stick to the issue of the ventilation.
Oh, okay. As far as ventilation, we have some benefit because the City of St. Louis Park Environmental Health Department conducted air quality testing on secondhand smoke. The results came in 15 to 500 times safer than the OSHA permissible exposure limits. And in three of those establishments, they actually had ventilation equipment. That would be the TGI Fridays on 394, the Santorini's on 394, and Applebee's in Knollwood Center. The results came in 68 times safer than OSHA regulations at the TGI Fridays. 152 times safer than OSHA regulations at the Applebee's, and 174 times safer than OSHA regulations at the Santorini's. And the beauty of that is it's a nonpartisan organization. In fact, I dare say the City of St. Louis Park was probably pro-smoking ban. And as a matter of fact, Bob Moffitt, the chairman or the communications director from the American Lung Association of Minnesota, is written up as heralding those air quality studies as fantastic. And this is exactly what they've been telling us. Until, of course, somebody went the extra step and compared those readings to the OSHA air quality permissible exposure limits, and now they're also embarrassed by them. They really don't want them brought up. As a matter of fact, the American Cancer Society conducted air quality testing, and those results out of New York came in at 532 to 25,000 times safer than OSHA permissible exposure limits. If I may just make one final comment, you know, we already have a mechanism in place, folks. There's no need for these smoking bans, and if it weren't for the pharmaceutical nicotine funding our organizations like American Lung Association, American Cancer Society, and American Heart Association, there's a packet of info I can provide you if you'd like to see that. This wouldn't be an issue at all. We would allow OSHA regulations to dictate, as we do in our factories with welding smoke. And that's exactly what we ought to be doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Discussion to the amendment, members? Representative Schumper.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I can support this amendment. Simply because I'm just shocked that the proposal here says every 2 hours. I have a little experience with livestock barns, and we always shoot for a complete exchange in every 5 to 10 minutes. I'm just blown over by this. I just can't believe that people are only talking about changing the air every 2 hours. That's just my reaction.
Representative Huntley. Representative Ochoa, sure.
Yeah. Actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. It was supposed to be 2 times an hour, so I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Where is that?
So,
it's in B there?
Yeah.
Is that an author's?
Yes.
Okay. So it should be every half hour, essentially, or 2 times an hour. Does everybody get that, what the amendment is? Okay. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, my only comment is I don't know how you can exceed OSHA limits if we have no OSHA limits on secondhand smoke.
Well, any further discussion, members? And the amendment would say, I think on line 115, indoor air twice every hour must be installed as follows. So, and we'll just incorporate that in. I'm sorry. Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No. Division.
Division.
Okay. All right, we'll do a division. Everybody who is in favor, please raise their hand. Thank you. All opposed, raise their hands. Okay, thank you. The amendment fails 9 to 10. There are 9 ayes, 10 opposed. We'll go to, I think, Representative Anderson, you have DE1. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. DE1 basically would eliminate the availability of cigarettes in the state of Minnesota to all people.
Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, the purpose of this bill is to protect workers.
Excuse me, I'm not sure if everybody has this amendment. It's DE1. I think it's in the packet. Representative Huntley.
The purpose of our bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to protect people from secondhand smoke. It's not to prevent anyone from smoking.
Mr. Chair. Representative Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, if you want to protect people from smoke, my concern would be, if you want to be intellectually consistent, don't you want to protect the children that are in the homes?
Representative, any response?
That's not part of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I thought the statement was one of health concern, and specifically the health of employees, and I heard the good doctor up here a little bit ago saying that any exposure is unhealthy and potentially lethal. It seems to me that if you're going to pick and choose who gets exposed to it, shouldn't we be looking at the most vulnerable in our society, which would be children? And I'll give you an example. I understand we outlaw smoking on airplanes, and it would seem we do that because you've got a steel tube hurtling through the sky with some 100 people on it that can't get off if other people decide to pollute their air. We've got restaurants and bars where people who have legs that work can walk in and leave, but we've got employees that you say that they should be protected from smoke, and yet you say it's not part of this bill. Why isn't it part of this bill? Why don't you want to protect everyone from what you believe is such a significant health problem?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I understand where you're going with this, and you know probably the biggest issue dealing with this bill in its current form is personal rights. And so I think the large majority of the people who are supporting this bill understand the personal rights end at my nose. In other words, I have a right to do what I want to do, you have a right to do what you want to do, but you don't have a right to hit me in the nose. And that's where this bill is at. And in terms of individual rights, you as a as an individual have a right to smoke, and you as an individual have a right over your family, and we are not infringing upon those rights. The rights we're talking about here are the rights of those who don't have a voice in this process and those who walk innocently into a place and all of a sudden are assailed by secondhand smoke. And that's the area that this bill deals with.
Mr. Chairman, well, Representative Severson, apparently you prefer to punch the owner of the business right in the face because you're going to pick an owner of private property who has the right to operate in a free market. The free market should dictate, and we've had these discussions in the past, free market should dictate whether or not you want to frequent an establishment. That person who owns the bar or restaurant, as long as tobacco is a legal commodity in this country, can allow smoking or not allow smoking on his or her premise. People who do not want to be exposed to the smoke can choose not to work there or not to frequent that business. It's their private property as opposed to a public institution like this. What you're saying is that we're going to take away the right of that private property owner to determine what he or she believes the market will bear. And again, I would ask you, if this amendment that Representative Tremba offered to take care of this serious health issue, the ventilation amendment, if that's not acceptable to this committee, then why, Representative Severson, wouldn't you just outlaw tobacco products entirely if you believe, and I know you do, that secondhand smoke is the killer that it is?
And I'm not sure if that... Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Emmer, I appreciate your argument in this issue. And again, going to personal property rights and the bar owner's freedom to own those property rights, to own that property and do what he wants with that property. But along with that, openness to the public and his business opportunities to the public becomes personal accountability. That personal accountability deals with safety hazards, which we deal with on a regular basis. The Department of Health regulates the food, they regulate the water, and now we're saying we know there's a carcinogen in the air and secondhand smoke. We have an obligation as policymakers to regulate the air. If we know that there is, in fact, a pandemic in an air in a restaurant, it's our obligation to quarantine off that restaurant and say, you know what, you can't go in there. In this particular place, we're saying, you know what, there's stuff in the air here, and we know what the source of that stuff is, and we're saying we need to quarantine this from the state of Minnesota. We need to eliminate, to the best of our ability, the hazard that deals with secondhand smoke in the public places in Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, if you'll let me. I appreciate that, Representative Severson and Representative Huntley, but this is the problem. It's intellectually inconsistent, and I would suggest almost borderline dishonest, to suggest that this is somehow the same situation as regulating food. If it is the same situation, if that's the comparison that we choose to make, then the amendment that we just voted down should have been voted up. We regulate restaurants in terms of how they prepare food, how they store food. Why? Because we don't want certain bacteria to grow and run rampant. We have just heard that there is ventilation equipment available. We've heard from the industry, from somebody who has sold it for years. It works. We've heard from the industry that they are more than willing. In fact, we heard one proprietor has put $50-some thousand into this ventilation equipment, and the air within his premise was safer than the air out in the parking lot on Selby. I find that hard to believe, but that's apparently what he learned. This would seem to be a situation that if you believe it's dangerous, if it's akin to why we regulate bacteria and everything else, then ventilation equipment would have been the answer. If you believe that it's the health hazard that we are promoting through this bill and it needs to be eliminated because it's so lethal, then it should be eliminated completely. This is a legal substance in this country. And that's the statement. I think this is outrageous that you can go this far on this issue, but you wouldn't outlaw certain foods that could carry salmonella bacteria and the like.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Anderson, thank you for bringing forward this amendment. I won't be supporting it because where you have cigarettes, then what is the next? Alcohol, and the list goes down the line. But I do think it points out an inconsistency in the argument, as Representative Emmer is suggesting. One thing I would do is point the committee. I have the Surgeon General's executive summary that everybody's talking about. I don't have the full report. On page 14 of the executive summary, it states, evidence suggests that exposure to secondhand smoke, let me go down a little bit further, my apologies. Number 8, in the United States, the home is now becoming the predominant location for the exposure of children and adults to secondhand smoke. So my concern is that if people aren't allowed to smoke at the bar, they're not allowed to smoke at the restaurant, if we're not planning on changing their behavior, as you suggested, Representative Huntley, this isn't to change people's behavior in regards to smoking or not allow them to smoke. If they're not smoking in those two places, where are they smoking? Probably in their house. So I'm wondering if we're not exacerbating this comment that was made in the Surgeon General's executive summary in regards to children.
Representative Huntley.
Again, Mr. Chairman and members, the Surgeon General's report says that the ventilation systems don't work. And the purpose of this bill is to protect workers in their work environment. Should we do something about homes? I would like to, but this I would love to change the world and get rid of tobacco altogether, but this mm-hmm. is simply a step on the way.
Any further discussion to Representative Anderson's amendment? All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment fails. Representative Abel, do you have A5?
I do. If I can just, if you want me to formally introduce one, or just like to chat about them, and then I will be brief. I know that I don't. Do you intend to get done?
Yeah.
Okay. I will, if you want me to move one just for the heck of it, I will. I'll move.
You don't have to move one for the heck of it.
Okay. Then I won't. But let me, I have four amendments here. I have, if we had a little more time, we'd have more discussion and debate. I think that would be nice, but we don't, and so I respect that. I'm also not going to take members on a trail here of ever-increasingly cool amendments. The amendment I would offer next would be 50%. If you didn't like 60%, how about 50%? Then I would have said, how about private clubs? I think we're in dangerous curve as we move into those. But I think further from my district, I think we're a step ahead. I think the compromise that makes the most sense is the one that was offered, something on the order of a well-written ventilation one, and a well-written, reasonable, take the restaurants out, leave the bars alone for now, phase them in over time, protect the livelihoods of people. And I hope that as the process goes along that we do that. I'm not going to make you vote on these. I would then talk about armed forces. Certainly the legions should be allowed to vote, to have their own freedom, to risk their lives, for heaven's sakes. I'm not making a vote on that today, members. And then the last one was ventilation. It could be written better, but that was the thought. They've got good ventilation. I believe it can help. I think there's some great disagreements among good experts that it could make a difference. I can also count the votes, and the bill is moving out today. I hope that as to the authors whose motives I don't question but actually respect, I know them in their hearts, and they're doing what they believe is correct. I hope as it goes on that they listen to input from people who have equally high intentions and do a good thing, but not to cause unnecessary harm, and protect and phase in. And thank you for your allowing me to speak.
And thank you, Representative Abel. I think you're withdrawing A2, A3, A4, and A5.
That's right.
Okay, thank you. A6, I'm not sure who this is. I think it has to do with proprietor liability. Does anybody claim that one?
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting...
Or would you rather A7 first?
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment takes care of the A7 piece.
Okay.
But I guess before we go to the A6...
The author's amendment, referring to.
Mr. Chairman. I think I'd have like to have a little bit more discussion before we get into that regarding the path of the bill.
Sure.
As we go forward... This bill has a lot of ramifications, a lot of repercussions, and I just am wondering, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Representative Huntley has a pretty strong understanding of what path this bill will take, and I'm not just talking about the next step, I'm talking about the full steps that you plan to bring the bill forward through the process.
Well, and Representative Broad, I can tell you that the next step that I know of, because we're referring to it, to Commerce. And beyond that, I don't know, Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I have no idea what the various committee chairs are going to request, so I don't know what the path is. I would just soon send it to the floor as soon as we can.
Well, it won't happen today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe Representative Huntley, we could go back to the floor and do some re-referrals again today like we did a little bit earlier. But, you know, part of the reason for me asking that is that I understand that the path will go to Commerce, and that's great. I appreciate that information. But when I look at this bill, if it just goes to Commerce and from Commerce Representative Huntley goes to the floor, I would have some very strong concerns over that path. It would appear to me, and maybe you can tell me the path from which it came first, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Broad. And it was referred to this committee directly from introduction. I have confidence that Representative Huntley will work with you to resolve concerns about the next steps.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, one of the requests I would make is, one, Representative Huntley, I assume that you have a fiscal note requested already. If not, I'm just wondering if you plan to do so that we have that information as soon as possible for as this goes forward.
Representative Huntley?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, there is no fiscal note at this point. It has not been sent to a finance committee yet. We will certainly try to get one. I will tell you that in the city of Duluth, when they passed their smoking ordinance, there was no decline in tax revenues from bars and restaurants.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Huntley, when you request that fiscal note, and if you don't wish to do it, I understand, and maybe we can do it then to help out. We could request a fiscal note with a local a local focus, too. You know, you can have the state fiscal note and also the local note.
Is that automatic?
Is that automatic? Mr. Chairman, in our tax committee hearings, we were saying we were hearing that we had to make an additional request to make sure that that happened. And I just want to make sure that that does happen, because I do think from an enforcement standpoint, from a lot of the other standpoints, there could be some fiscal impacts that are inadvertent, unintentional, whatever they may be. I just want to make sure that they're part of the puzzle. And then just to follow up with that, Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, I would expect that this bill would travel through the local government committee. I would expect that this bill travel through the judiciary and what is now, it's like Prince, you know, the names keep changing. Formerly known as the Judiciary Committee, I'm not sure what its formal name is now, but with the penalties that are associated in this bill, I would assume that those would be pretty common paths that this bill would be taking, and I'm just curious to know whether you've had any discussions with those chairmen or would work with me to make sure that those things happen.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Broad, I will certainly discuss this with the other chairman. I was not an author of this bill last year, or 2 years ago, so I don't know what path it took. But we will certainly have to contact all the chairmen that might be interested.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Just to follow up on that, one of the things that's so intriguing about this, and I think there's a heck of a lot of things intriguing about this bill, is the local government mandate, and that seems to be left aside and not talked about a lot in terms of this is the state restricting or pulling authority from the local governments in terms of their ability to operate and to license these places and also in terms of the enforcement piece. So I wanted to make sure that we do have a strong discussion over the local government impact and also the additional local government mandate that essentially this is doing.
Thank you, Representative Broughton. I'm sure that can all be worked out. Representative Carmen, did you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, that was my question. What is the fiscal note? Because there must be something with the cigarette tax or something that we wouldn't have revenue for anymore. So that was what I was going to talk about.
Okay, and it sounds like we're going to request the fiscal note. Did you want to do A6? Oh, okay. Well, Representative Anderson was on the list first. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too hope that, because it's mentioned in here several times, the effect on public transportation, that this bill would also go to the Transportation Committee. Thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you. Representative Emmer, did you have a comment?
I do have a question, but I think
Representative Broad's going to offer the A6.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, since it's sitting here, we should probably get it on the table. I do move the A6 amendment.
Okay. Please explain the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, essentially this takes out the penalties. I have a concern over changing the petty misdemeanor to a misdemeanor, wondering what the rationale for doing that is, and also in terms of punishing the bar owners and the restaurant owners if a patron chooses not to comply. I'm a little concerned about how that impacts the owners.
Representative Huntley?
My understanding is the misdemeanor is for the owner and the petty misdemeanor is for the smoker. And if someone's smoking and the owner does not want him to smoke, he can request that person leave. And if it's a private place, then that person is required by law to leave.
Representative Walker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about this one. I'm not sure what our cities and our counties have been doing. A patron decides to go in the bathroom and smoke, and there happens to be someone there watching the bar that particular day. Is that a violation right away? Is it a violation after that patron has been asked to leave? If it is a violation right away, why is the ordinance on the owner? I'm not sure. Is there someone here that has that information?
Legal counsel. Counsel?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I don't know what other counties and cities are doing, but the bill, section 144.416, would add to the responsibilities of the proprietors, but sets out the steps that they should take. It's section 8 of the bill on page 4.
So I think based on the language here, if these steps weren't followed knowingly, then that would be a violation on the part of the proprietor.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley and Severson, I think that's something that while this bill gets ready to go to Commerce, that you may want to follow up and find out if Representative Broad's amendment doesn't pass with these different steps, and actually even as it relates to an employee who may have retaliation, who reports, and how the owner may have be impacted by that too.
Any further discussion on the amendments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Division. All in favor, raise your hand. Okay, all opposed. The amendment fails 8 to 11.
Question.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Either one of the authors.
And Representative Emmer, at this point, I don't know how long you're gonna your question's gonna be. It's gonna be longer than 2 minutes, and I don't know how much other discussion there's gonna be. Is there a lot of other discussion, members? The other committee. Oh, okay. Well, why don't you go ahead?
Does this this bill, does it apply to tribal lands?
Representative Huntley?
I checked. They're not separate nations, Representative Huntley. They're sovereigns, and they would be subject to criminal law jurisdiction in the state of Minnesota. So the question I want to ask you, and I will, there are two of them, and they will be within a minute.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
The first one is, did you ask anyone, since you are carrying this for the first time, whether or not you could draft it so that it applies? You're representing it as a statewide ban, and it's not. If it doesn't apply to tribal lands, it's not a statewide ban. So could you tell me who you talked to determine whether or not you could make it a statewide ban and apply it to tribal lands?
President Huntley?
People that talked to me about this bill when it was first being drafted, I asked that question, and I was told that it would not apply to tribal lands. I'm not an attorney. You are. You'd have to look at the language, and or we could have other attorneys look at it, but it's my intent that it not apply to tribal lands.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Emmer.
Last one, then, at least for now, because I'll have several at another time. Representative Huntley or Representative Severson, have you bothered to do any type of research as to what you're going to do to small-town bars and restaurants that are adjacent to tribal lands?
Representative Huntley or Severson?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, I can tell you the city of Duluth passed their ordinance, so we're right across the bridge from Superior, which does not have a smoking ban. And again, there was no decline in tax revenues from bars and restaurants.
Further discussion, members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, I just have a question for you. At the beginning of this hearing, you had made an author's amendment to remove Subdivision 4, and which is the preemption section. And I guess I don't see that as a problem if the bill goes through in its strongest form the way we have it here now, but I guess I'd like a little bit of explanation of why you chose to do that right out of the right away at the beginning.
When Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, bill is now silent on that. It says nothing about the local government ordinances. However, there is also nothing that would prevent local units of government from doing whatever they want to do as long as it's stronger.
Thank you. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. If this becomes law, who enforces it?
Representative Huntley or Severson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Finstead. I would assume at this point if there was a violation that took place, it would be the normal police that would report, and that would be after the individual bar owner or restaurant owner has asked the individual to leave. The individual is belligerent and refuses to leave and continues to smoke. At that point, it becomes any other incident that would take place at a bar. So I don't see an increased load on the local community law enforcement from that prospect.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up then with what you've just said. I mean, I think that puts the owners of these establishments in an awkward position if they're going to be the front line of the enforcement and have to deal in an uncomfortable situation, and then we're going to put the burden upon the local police. So I guess it just further enforces the fact, which Representative Broad pointed out, that there has to be some fiscal implications in this bill. So it has to, we have to, if we're responsible at all, have to have that in front of us before we act upon this in the entire body.
Thank you, Representative Finstead. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just back to Representative Liebling's comments regarding the preemption piece. You know, if the thought is that we are trying to create a level playing field, or if that's the intent of what the bill is trying to do, then it would seem to me that you'd almost have to have a preemption standard in there as well, in terms of, I mean, if you don't, then local governments are going to be freelancing and having a more stringent standards, or they could be, or this, that, and the other, and then you've done anything but create a level playing field. So I'm a little confused on, you know, we want to take this authority away from the local governments and make it a level playing field, but without that, you're doing anything but that. So I'm a little confused on why that's not included in the bill.
Representative Severson, I believe members, we've relocated the meeting that was to follow us, and so we have this room to continue this discussion.
Thank you.
Not that we need to extend it that much longer. But if you do have questions, we're not going to. Representative Ember, that was for you. It sounds like you might have some more. So, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, and just recently I met with, I am located in a five-city area, of which there are not smoking bans. There are individual businesses that have implemented a smoking ban policy, but there is a reluctance on the side of any of those individual cities to implement a policy individually. Now, they would like to do that, and the constituents that live in that district would like to do that, but they know they disadvantage the businesses within their area if they go smoke-free and the other businesses don't. So the issue on this particular bill is to say, look, let's make a level playing field, no exceptions, and everybody's playing out the same sheet of music. I find it hard to believe that at any point one of those small cities or townships would try to implement something more difficult than the one that we are proposing here and try and push business out of their district. So I think the bill, the way it sits, is appropriate and probably the most efficient one that we could implement.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative Severson, thank you for that explanation. I find that argument regarding the economic impact rather interesting. You know, one side says there's a significant economic impact. The other side argues that there is no economic impact. And if you argue that there's no economic impact, which I don't hear you doing, but I hear Representative Huntley doing, if you argue that there's no economic impact, if you follow that up, then there's no need to have an enforced level playing field, because that would imply that the playing field is level and the market is taking care of itself. So the arguments regarding the economic impact are inconsistent with the request for a level playing field.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the entire state of California did this. There was a short downturn in tax receipts from bars and restaurants in about 6 months. It went back right up to where it was, so there was no long-term overall economic impact on the state. Were certain bars and restaurants affected? Yes, they probably were.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative Huntley, thank you for acknowledging that, because I think we heard today that that's exactly the case, that there are those individual bar owners, there are those family businesses that may no longer be there. There are those situations. Now, you can always look on a macro level and suggest one thing or another, but when you boil down on a more micro level, there certainly is that impact, and so I appreciate that you pointed that out.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, you said something after answering Representative Finstead's question about who's going to enforce this, and you said something to the effect that you were assuming that local enforcement was going to do it, and I'm concerned about the word assumed. So just take that into consideration when we make assumptions about what happens, because you know what happens when we assume things.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Huntley, maybe you can help me out with another piece. I was looking at the last page of your report, page 6, and there's a repealer in there. And that repealer deals with section 415, but that relates to a definition that's in point 413, and that definition is the definition of public place. And I don't have the statute book in front of me, but essentially I think in the definition of public place, it exempts out private homes, and it exempts out businesses that have enclosed places or spaces that have all smokers. And I'm wondering if you are going to need to change that definition to make it more consistent, or if I'm reading it incorrectly.
Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, yeah, you are correct. I think that there will have to be a change in the repealer to make it consistent with the rest of the bill. And I don't know the precise language you need at this time.
Representative Broad? I don't know if you wanted to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that there's a loophole already. So Representative Huntley, you might want to take a look at that. I'm not going to offer that because I think that's probably unnecessary at this point.
Representative Norton.
I was just going to speak to the issue of enforcement, and I guess I see that as kind of a red herring, if you will, only for the fact that we have many laws throughout our counties, our cities, and our states that are enforced very adequately by any number of ways, including our local law enforcement. But we have a variety of laws. And the other thing is we have up to 20 states. I've heard anywhere from 14, 15, 16, and 20 states that have this type of legislation in place already, and enforcement has not been an issue in those, as well as a number of counties in this very state and cities in this very state that have not had any issues with enforcement. So I see that as not necessarily something we should spend a lot of time on. I would also just like, because there are some handouts that were presented earlier from my county, Olmsted County, and I want to point out two things. One is that Olmsted County did pass its ordinance. You were provided with one survey. There was a survey that the county did that had very opposite results that has not been presented today, so I just want to point that out. And the other handout actually is quite a thick handout of elected officials asking, and I just want to clarify, it's asking Olmsted County not to go ahead. Olmsted County has indeed gone ahead, so that stack of papers is really moot, because many of those individuals having Olmsted County have passed their ordinance would like a statewide ordinance because they are worried about the inequity. Thank you.
Further discussion, members?
To the bill?
To the bill, yes, run the bill. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't smoke. My wife doesn't smoke. We teach our children the dangers of smoking. And I lost a grandfather to emphysema. My mother smoked most of her life. She formed black lung or spots on her lungs. The doctor said, you need to quit smoking or you too will suffer the same consequences as her father, my grandfather. And it was interesting. I was sitting in a small cafe in my district in a very small town, and I was sitting there with a friend having breakfast, and he said, Representative Hamilton, you need to support the smoking ban. And I said, Larry, look over there in that booth. And in the booth, just right across the cafe, was two individuals that said no smoking. Both of them were smoking. I said, who are those people? And he sheepishly said, the one on the right is the owner, the one on the left is the waitress. And I said, Larry, if I vote for this, what's going to change here? He said, nothing. So they're going to be fined every time they choose to do this on their own premise. Is that correct? Premises. And he said, absolutely. You know, there was a war vet that stopped me at the convenience store in my hometown. And he said, Representative Hamilton, I risked my life so you can enjoy your freedoms. I risked my life so you can enjoy your freedoms. And now, you liberal son of a beep, are doing what you can to take away mine. You know, I lost my grandfather to smoking. I hate smoking. I teach my children the dangers of smoking. But you know what? We're talking about civil liberties and property owner rights, and I cannot support this bill.
Further discussion. Representative Gallo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll speak in support of the ban, and I want to go to a specific aspect of it. We've talked about the health issues. And I've heard a lot about the property rights issues and the personal rights issues. And with all due respect, we have a legal substance. People have a legal right to purchase it and smoke it. And I have a legal right to deny that. If I go to a public place, I don't want, and other people do not want, the smoke that someone else chooses freely in this society of ours to smoke and inhale and purchase to be put into my lungs. And the truth is, unless I hold my breath permanently in that establishment or that public place, I don't have a choice. My choice is eliminated. My freedom to not breathe that smoke that somebody else chose to smoke is eliminated. And the health consequences of that are in addition to that breach of my right. I have a daughter who works in a restaurant that has a smoking section and a non-smoking section. And she complains to me when she comes home in the evening and her clothes smell of smoke. She hasn't got a choice about that. That's where she works. Now, could she go work someplace else where there is no smoke? Yes. She's chosen to work in a restaurant establishment. And the truth is, those environments carry that offense with it, if you will. It's damaging to her health. It's damaging to the health of the clients. Recently, I went to dinner with Minority Leader Seifert at a local establishment in St. Paul that had been a smoking place, a heavy smoking place. And when the ban went into effect, they took a hit in business. When we went there, I had to park three blocks away. The place was crammed to the rafters and busy. People were drinking at the bar. People were enjoying themselves. The difference was no smoke. It's time for us to do this.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I actually was not going to speak, but after listening to Representative Hamilton, I was like, ooh, you've moved me. I was with you in that story. You guys were too, because it was really quiet in here. You know, I have no doubts of why I personally support, and I will be voting to pass the smoking ban in particular. You know, as a one of seven children that lived with smoking and three of us having lung issues, I understand, N35W, and not, that's what my mother always blamed it on, not understanding that the arguments and the debates that I used to get into it with my mother over the years of the differences between body chemistries and what I may be susceptible to versus some of my siblings and why I have developed asthma. It's good to note, actually, my mother, who has been smoking almost 60 years, who I couldn't believe how clear her lungs were. And so she was like, aha. I'm like, no, you just have better genes than I when it comes to that. But my piece of voting for the amendment that Representative Otremba had, where I struggled with, was really the amount of time that we're giving to some of our bars. Restaurants is an easy given one. And it was some of the concerns that I've had over the last couple months that I wasn't able to get the information, and actually someone did try to get it to me today and I didn't get it prior to this meeting, of how much time we're giving business owners to get ready for this. This bill passing along is going to go into an enactment if it does pass in August. And, you know, I have small businesses that have struggled, bars, and actually the Representative Dotwall, the reason why I didn't vote with you with the penalty one, actually, because I have a bar that purposely, on a regular basis, right after the enactment by Minneapolis, violated that law. And so I do know businesses will do that, so there needs to be some type of balance. But I think that it is important, while Representative Huntley and Severson moves along, I realize the odds are you won't change the enactment date, but I hope that you're open for discussion, especially for our smaller businesses, our family businesses, especially for those that are in rural Minnesota. Regardless of the amount of time that it takes, I don't think that another 6 months or a year will do that much damage, even if it's just for the bar.
Representative Finstead. Thank you, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One word or words that have been pointed out a few times, Representative Gottwalt and a few others have talked about, you know, the smoking in public places. I want to make sure that we all understand that we're talking about private properties. We're talking about private places. We're talking about free market citizens that own and operate businesses that provide opportunities and open up their doors for us, and we can choose with our legs to walk into that place and eat their food and partake in their atmosphere, whether it be smoking or not smoking, whether it be bowling or whether it be you name it. But my point is this, that it's a free market. No one is making anybody go into these places. If it is too smoky and you don't like it, don't go there. I have a two-week-old boy, and I don't need, I can go around the room, I don't need Representative Hamilton, I don't need Representative Wotremba, I don't need Representative Norton to tell me as a parent to not take that child into a smoking or non-smoking restaurant. I can make that choice. We don't need a big government to tell us and micromanage our lives. So this is government just getting one step closer into the free market. I look at this from the farming perspective. I come from a farm family, and my family produces corn and soybeans. And if the market for corn and soybeans isn't there, we then would look elsewhere to diversify our farm. And we've done that in the past, where we then, you know, produced cows or hogs or alfalfa or whatever it may be, but we've responded to the market pressures. Not too different than a lot of restaurants and restaurant owners, the bar owners in this room. We've heard it from the gentleman that owns Fabulous Ferns. He responded to his clientele in the market, and he upgraded his HVAC system to create an atmosphere that his market, that his customers were telling him they wanted and they needed. He didn't need a big government to come in with a big hand and say, no, we're gonna have smoking police come in and enforce this law, and we know how to live a life better than you. You're too dumb. You don't know how to live a healthy life. We'll tell you how to live that healthy life. That's exactly what this bill does. So, members, please just think of it very open-minded and from a free market perspective. We do not need this bill, and please join me in opposing this bill.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to ask for a roll call.
Okay, we will do that. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just would like to comment that, you know, one of the important reasons that we need to pass this ban is because this is really about setting norms for behavior in our state. And we see one of the things, I don't know that it was really discussed too much by the testifiers, but this impacts the rate of smoking, and it will impact the rate of smoking in Minnesota. And sure, it may make us lose some tobacco taxes, and if it does, that's just fine with me. I'd like us to go to zero tobacco taxes because nobody in the state is buying and using tobacco. But we are the health committee here, and we spend an awful lot of time talking about health care in Minnesota, why people are ill, the cost of health care, and then we're going to be dealing with this an awful lot this session. And this is one of the things we just heard the other day from testifiers telling us about how we can start to reform our system in Minnesota. And one of the things we need to do is encourage healthy behaviors. Now, we're not mandating that people can't smoke here, but we are setting a norm, and we're saying that as a state that we recognize the dangers of secondhand smoke. And I think that's a very important thing to do. And sure, it's hard to change. Change is tough. And I recognize, I hear people saying that in some of these businesses, it's going to be hard. It might be hard on some businesses. Some businesses might even fail. But as a state, I think it's our responsibility to set the norm, to set the standard high, and to say to people, as a state, we recognize that cigarette smoke contains a lot of poisons, and we're going to do what we can to get those poisons away from the greatest number of people.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Finstead, I listened carefully. Okay. And I would like the same freedoms you're describing to walk with my two legs and the people in my district with their two legs into every Minnesota business and be able to patronize those businesses. And I think that's why I'm supporting this ban, in addition to the public health benefits. I think it's important that we can all exercise our personal freedoms. Thank you.
Representative Wotremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to talk, but I decided to. I don't smoke. I don't let anybody in my house smoke. I don't let anybody drink in my car smoke. My husband was a Navy guy, and he was on duty for 72 hours straight. And they couldn't take a coffee break, and they couldn't take a bathroom break, but they could take a cigarette break, and they were given 2 packs a day free. I have kids. They've all chosen not to smoke. They refuse to work in restaurants that are smoking.
But I'm the kind of person that's a one-on-one person. And there will be family restaurants closing. And they will be displaced. And it will be a tremendous loss for that family. And we have many of those types of businesses in our rural areas. And it's economic development. And the technology is growing faster and faster, and I truly believe that some of the ventilators are really working well, and they will get better. But these are one person at a time. Kids, one person at a time that will be displaced. And a lot of these owners are in their 50s or older, and it will be almost impossible to find another job. So I'm not a proponent of smoking. I've never smoked. But I care a lot about the people who've chosen that business, have built up those businesses, and have those kinds of relationships in the community. And so I'm going to vote against this.
Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to say that the only perspective that I find compelling from the opponents of this legislation is, and I want to reference Representative Broad's comments and Representative Finstad's comments, is the impact on small businesses, as Representative Oterba just referenced also. If I was to make a list of all the actions of government that have disadvantaged small dairy for such as myself over the last 30 years, I'd have a list as long as my arm. Believe me. And, you know, so I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying about small bar owners and small restaurant owners. On the other hand, when I look at those things, most of those things were designed to improve the quality of the product that we produce on our farms. Our milk is tested. Every load that goes off my farm is tested in a dozen different ways to maintain quality so that the public can feel safe about that product. And I guess that's why I'm going to support this bill. It's just, you know, we're no longer a few people scattered over the rural landscape in America. You know, we're people pushed together in big metropolitan areas and in crowded restaurants and bars and everything else. And so what we do does affect other people. I would strongly disagree with Mr. Finstad. You know, we don't have a free market approach to any kind of business in this country at all. I mean, should we get rid of fire codes in order to comply with this idea that every building or every business should be operated as a free market business? I don't think anybody in this room wants to get rid of fire codes or any other regulations that we have for businesses of any kind, big or small. You know, it's just, I hate smoking too. My father smoked all his life. He told all of his kids to never smoke, and none of us ever did. And maybe I have a selfish reason for this. My wife and I love to go dancing, and most of the places that have music for dancing also have bars where people do a lot of smoking, and so we come home and you have to almost throw your clothes out of the house. They smell so bad from smoke. So in weighing everything, I have to come down in support of this bill. A few people are going to be disadvantaged. That always happens in an economy like ours. I don't think the impact is going to be nearly as bad as people here are suggesting, because we are going to have a level playing field. And I just really think, for, as Representative Liebling said, we're creating an expectation among the public that smoking is not a good thing, and we're reinforcing that every time we pass a smoking ban. And this time we're going to have a big smoking ban, I think, and I think it's going to be a really good thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Representative Liebling for finally saying it very clearly. This is a proposal that's all about social engineering. And Representative Chumper, I would have to disagree with you. This country is about free markets, and that's what we try to offer. In fact, we have too much regulation. And I think we need to be attacking that here. We need to be getting rid of some of the regulation that allows businesses, so businesses can thrive in this state, instead of look for opportunities to leave. In this case, Representative Liebling, I can't thank you enough, because your statement was, we are setting the norms for behavior. That's what this is all about. We here in St. Paul are going to start to tell the rank-and-file citizens of this state what they can and can't do with their own property. I think next we should probably have a bill that outlaws running with scissors, because that is a dangerous activity. It's a health risk. I think we should probably have a proposal that there will be no more swimming after a large meal within an hour or so, because that is a health risk. There were 15,000 people that died across this country last year from falls. I really think we better start thinking about helmets for everybody, because that is a dangerous thing. 3,400 kids drowned in bathtubs last year across this country. Somebody probably better think about life jackets, or at least that they take baths with a lifeguard present. I'm sorry that I'm sounding so outrageous, but this is a problem. This country is based on freedom, and with freedom comes personal responsibility and the obligation to take care of yourself. That's what Representative Finstad was talking about, Representative Chumper. He's talking about he is responsible for his health, welfare, and well-being. And contrary to what Representative Murphy states, that she should be entitled to go into places that she wants to go into, those are private property. If my house, which is smoke-free, we're not a smoke-free environment, I would tell you that you don't have the right to come into my house unless you're going to put up with that behavior. And I think it's the same thing for a private business owner. It's funny to me that when we hear about this distinction about one author argues there is no economic impact and the other one argues that, well, clearly there is, because we need a level playing field. It's funny how these people, they get shut out of one place and they go to another. Why? Because there are people in this state that want a place to smoke. We may not agree with it. We may not like it. But that's what they want. And here we are in St. Paul becoming the social engineers that are going to set the norms for their behavior. Frankly, that's not what this country is built on. And you know what? If you question how outrageous my statements might be, we just had a bill offered today in the House where somebody is proposing that there will be no more, one of our fellow representatives, there will be no more glass containers on boats, because we can't be trusted not to hurt ourselves having glass in boats. Folks, this is a bad idea. The ventilation idea was appropriate. It's consistent. The industry has offered to make the investment, and I think we should really let them do that.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to thank Representative Huntley and Representative Severson for bringing this important piece of legislation before us. This is about public health, and as a health care provider myself, I am unable to come up with any redeeming health impacts of smoking. I can't think of one positive thing about smoking. That said, it is still legal. And you, Representative Emmer, you referenced Representative Liebling's comments. We did pass an increase in the smoking tax last year. And when I went back to my practice, and I care for a lot of teenagers, and a lot of them smoke, and a lot of them came up to me and said, I can't afford it anymore. So to a certain extent, it is shaping behavior. And on that regard, when it comes to smoking, I think that is a good thing. Because the fact of the matter is, this is about public health. Smoking is one of the major causes of preventable morbidity and mortality. And you are paying the price for that. This is about public health policy. That's what this committee does. We have been struggling with high costs of health care. This is a very important step that we can take. And I'm going to be voting in favor of this ban. And thank you again for bringing it forward.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Chairman Thiessen, and also I wanted to thank Representative Huntley and Severson for bringing this forward. And also, as a health care provider working in the nursing home industry for the past 40 years, I go back, let's just go back 25 years when I had maybe one person come in with a nebulizer treatment. I now have 26 of those. So I've got a wing of nebulizer treatments that I'm trying to get to. There is a huge fiscal note to this, and it is $1 billion a year that it is costing us. And if any of you want to try a very practical procedure, try to breathe 44 times a minute. I take respirations of people who are coming in and presenting. I've had them at age 32, 57, and 98 at the end stages of congestive obstructive pulmonary disease, of the end stages of bladder cancer. I want to tell you this is a long, lingering, painful way to die. We do need to go in this direction. This is a healthcare problem that has been with us for many years, and now, like I said, I have 25 med treatments, and I'm sure there's even more out there that we can't even get to. So thank you again for bringing this forward.
Representative Finstead.
This will be quick. I've debated on saying this, but I'm going to say it. Representative Rood, Representative Lieberman, and a few others have talked about the public health concerns, and I believe in your heart of hearts you believe that. I guess I cannot figure out why then you didn't support Representative Anderson's amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We had the option right there to take care of this big, bad, nasty product that's being sold in the state.
Yep.
We could have all jumped on board. Guess I don't get it.
Any other members before I go to authors? Representative Severson and or Huntley? Did you have any final
comment? I'll start out, and then Mr. Chair and members, and then turn it over to Representative Severson. About 6,000 people die every year in Minnesota from smoking or secondhand smoke. That's about 500,000 nationally. Of those 500,000, about 50,000 were never smokers. They died from secondhand smoke. That's more people than die from breast cancer. We did not hear testimony here today, but I can tell you that there's at least two women in the city of St. Cloud that happen to be waitresses and happened to be pregnant. And both of them were told by their individual physicians that they should not work in the smoking part of those establishments where they worked as waitresses. Women shouldn't have to choose between having a job and protecting their child.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's been a great honor to be a part of this discussion, a spirited discussion, but I think there's some things that we need to go back to. Surgeon General's report said secondhand smoke causes premature death and disease in children and in adults who do not smoke. The scientific evidence indicates there is no risk level of exposure. Scientific evidence that there is no risk level of exposure to secondhand smoke. And finally, into the most important point that's been brought up here about ventilation, eliminating smoking indoor spaces fully protects non-smokers from exposure to secondhand smoke. Separating smokers from non-smokers, cleaning the air, and ventilating buildings cannot eliminate exposures of non-smokers to secondhand smoke. And this is through many experts. If you read, take the time to read this. This is many experts, many studies who have put this thing together, so it's a credible source. Ventilation is not the answer. And if it was the answer, and the small businesses that we are trying to protect here, what small business can afford a $60,000 ventilation system? The ones that we're not trying to protect would be put under by putting that exception into this bill. If we're talking about social behavior, in the mid-1800s, we outlawed dueling, certain cause of death. And then in the early 1900s, we eliminated spitting on the sidewalk. Did that hurt anybody? No, but it's pretty gross. And so one of the things that we're doing here is we're saying, you know what, we know that this is a problem. We know that this is a health hazard. We know that when you go into a place that there is smoke, that it's going to affect you. And what we're saying is, we can do this. We as a state can do this. There are a number of other states that have jumped on board with this program. If we take a look 10 years back, the anniversary of stopping smoking in airplanes, what a concept. From that time until now, we have implemented a 40% ban locally by local control throughout the state. Local governments have taken that initiative. Now they're saying to us, you are the leaders of the state. You are the policymakers. You are the one who look out for a general policy of the public health of this state. And they're looking to us to implement that leadership. And today, this is part of that leadership. And I would ask you, members, as representatives of your constituents, to vote yes on this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, members and authors of the bill, methamphetamines in my county have been banned. It's been banned in the state to use meth. And the increase in methamphetamine in my district, in my county, has extremely exponentially increased, and I don't know how to stop it, but it's not allowed, and yet we still see it increase. I think if we would have put my bill in place, so we would have leveled the playing field dramatically and made it a ban, and we wouldn't have to be worrying about whether we're dealing with secondhand smoke or not. Cigarettes would not be allowed in this state. We'd be done with it. It'd be behind us. So I'm sorry that we voted it down, but that's the will of the committee. So, but I appreciate hopefully bringing it back and looking at it again.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we've had a great discussion here, and I thank the authors for responding as closely as they possible to actually answering the questions that have been posed. But one thing, Representative Huntley, that you mentioned in your closing that I don't think should go just aside is that you said she has to choose between her job and her child. And again, you know, the Surgeon General's report is talked about all the time by the proponents. Page 11, the evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of a causal relationship between maternal exposure to secondhand smoke and female fertility. Second, pregnancy, the evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of causal relationship between maternal exposure to secondhand smoke during pregnancies and spontaneous abortion. The evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of a causal relationship between exposure to secondhand smoke and neonatal mortality. The evidence is suggestive, but not sufficient to infer a causal relationship between maternal exposure to secondhand smoke during pregnancy and preterm delivery. The evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of a causal relationship between the exposure of secondhand smoke and cognitive functioning among children. The evidence is inadequate to infer. Those statements are constant in this report. And so, you know, while I just have the executive summary, sufficient to infer, inadequate to infer, there's all sorts of qualifiers that appear to be present in this report. Probably similar. That's another term that's used quite frequently in the executive summary that I've received. And if you can point me in the full report to where I ought to be looking, that'd be great. But I do think it's important to say that I'm not so sure that choice is exactly the choice that's on the table. It seems to me that the choice that we're having here today is, you know, we can argue it from a public health standpoint, we can argue it from an economic standpoint, we can argue it from an individual freedom standpoint. We're each going to have our own viewpoints on those things. But one thing that we keep missing, I think, is the local government piece. You know, if we want to have smoke-free workplaces, I remember maybe it was 10 years ago, it seems to kind of go quickly, but Baker Square, that was one of their marketing plans, was, hey, you guys, bring your kids, it's smoke-free. And guess what? People came. So why don't we trust Minnesotans? Why don't we trust Minnesotans to vote with their feet? Why don't we trust Minnesotans to make those decisions? Why don't we trust Minnesotans to know where they will or won't work? I have some strong concerns over this level playing field and whether it really is level for the people who work near some of the tribal casinos that won't have to abide by these regulations. We have people who deal cards in the state of Minnesota, but yet there's a cap on how many card tables can go at Canterbury. So guess where, if you want to be a card dealer, where you have to go? To the casinos. So, I mean, we really can't say that it is a level playing field, in truth, because it's not. Because it's not. So the question for me is, I'd like to take my family to non-smoking places. We do that. In fact, I carry those little Cancer Society pieces that say, I like a non-smoking restaurant, and leave them at the table. We do that because we want to vote with our feet. So who should make the decision? Who should make the decision over what happens in those private businesses? And even more concerning to me is who should make those decisions regarding what happens in our private homes? And that is a significant concern with your bill. So thank you very much for answering the questions. I won't be supporting your bill, as you can probably tell. But again, you know, I also hope that we don't demonize those who don't support the bill as pro-smokers or anti-kids, because that's simply not the case.
Representative Schumper.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Braun, and
and from those of us who are supporting the bill, I hope we're not demonized as insensitive to freedom, as Representative Demmer has so vividly put this issue. You know, I think all of us want to ensure freedom and choice in this society as much as he does. But, you know, this idea that we as a governing body can't try to draw out some common concerns and put them into the law in order to protect people so people don't have to go around constantly and be their own building inspector or electrical inspector or sewage inspector. I mean, why don't we get rid of all those things and let people vote with their feet when they come up to a building? If they think it looks safe, they can walk into it. We don't need a building code there, or we don't need an electrical inspection or anything else like that. I mean, I really find that putting those of us who support the ban in a bad light, and I don't think we deserve that. I mean, there has to be some commonality here and a respect and understanding that smoking is bad, probably worse than we even acknowledge, than even those of us who are in support of the ban acknowledge. You know, we know that from the study of chemicals. I used to do a lot of speaking on sustainable agriculture, and I always started out my presentation by saying the only safe agricultural chemicals were ones we haven't studied enough. And, you know, I really have a feeling that, you know, another 5 years of studies on this, on the impact of smoking will yield the same thing. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. I think we're fully informed. So, roll call being requested. We will take the vote on House File 305.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Anderson.
No.
Broad. Bunn.
Aye.
Emmer.
No.
Finstead.
No.
Fritz.
Yes.
Gottwald.
Yes.
Hamilton.
No.
Huntley.
Aye.
Liebling.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Aye.
Norton.
Aye.
Otremba.
No.
Rood.
Aye.
Chumper.
Aye.
Walker.
Yes.
Murphy.
Aye. Thank you.
Sorry.
The vote being 12 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and with recommendation and referred to the Commerce Committee. We are adjourned, members. Yeah.